Welcome back, everybody. We're talking with Mark Passio about the new age and, of course, the balance between the various components that we have both in the inner world and the outer world. But yeah, let's run through some of these points. You know, I wanted to get to some of the main points of critique that you have against the new age, Mark, and we can kind of run through some of them kind of as you did in the slides, I guess. But what are some of the big ones? Let's begin with some of those. You probably have a good order to do this by anyway, I think.
Sure. Yeah, I would say the very first deception in the New Age movement is to ignore the negative, ignore information that is construed or seen as negative or dark. And what I would say this does is it would actually limit someone's ability to accurately perceive what's really going on in the world. If you say, well, that's negative, that's nasty, that's something I don't want to quote unquote pollute my mind with taking in. Okay, because it makes me feel uncomfortable or bad. What you're doing is you're limiting your perceptions to what you feel good knowing about. And that doesn't mean that you know the truth. That just means all you're going to take in is what makes you feel good, what you're okay with hearing, and what doesn't upset you, quote unquote. Okay, this will do is create a naivete. It will create a gullibility within people, and they won't become, what, like I said before, streetwise to what's really going on this planet. And it's a very big disservice. The New Age movement deceivers, the ones who really are actively deceiving people, they're trying to convince people that how this works, you know, the reason you shouldn't ever look in anything that's negative is because if you pay attention to something that's negative, you're giving your power to it through your attention and you're making it grow, okay?
Right.
It doesn't work like that. As a matter of fact, it actually works the exact opposite way. And anybody can just intuitively recognize this. If you're sick and an illness is brewing in your body and you ignore it, what happens?
It gets worse.
It's the exact opposite thing that they're telling you regarding this. The more you ignore the negative, the more negative that thing becomes, because it grows, because you're not focusing on it to do something about it. Okay? The way to make something negative go away, like an illness or a sickness, is to recognize the root causal factor. Don't treat the symptoms. Look at it to make a diagnosis and treat the root causal factors. Change those causes that led to the creation of the harmful effects. And the New Age is telling you, don't look at the negative. So how could you ever make that diagnosis then? And therefore, how could you ever identify the causal factors? And therefore, how could you ever possibly solve that problem? Okay. So this is one of the biggest things. And it's one of the things that keeps the dynamic the way that it is, meaning unchanged for the better and even rapidly growing worse. So this is probably what I would consider the biggest of all New Age deceptions, is to ignore the negative.
And we can never run from it, as you say. I mean, no matter how much we try to forget in our conscious mind, the unconscious mind remembers. And I think that it will grow into something that's much worse, as you say, because if we put it in the shadow compartment, if I can put it, you know, use those terms, this is something that will gain even more, you know, energy from us subconsciously, if you will, because it's
that's
going
right.
to be recognized as a problem. And therefore, it's going to be an issue that we're going to avoid even more. So it's that kind of, you know, fear of looking into the, into the dark tunnel, if you will, and
That's
this
right.
will become a component of how we will be potentially controlled by something in the future. So we're doing ourselves a great disservice by following suit to that. Yeah,
absolutely. Henrik, I 100% agree with that. You know, if we don't drudge up these subconscious dark issues that need to be dealt with, all that's going to happen is we're going to be devoured by those demons that we do not want to drudge up and bring up from the deep levels of the subconscious mind. Now, see, the subconscious mind is there to protect the conscious mind from trauma that it has experienced. Okay, so we don't keep reliving it. But if you never do any psychic cleansing, the cleansing of those dark areas, those dark sides of the subconscious, again, you're actually going to be subconsciously controlled by those demons, if you will, those dark areas of the subconscious mind. And that's why really looking into that shadow material is what needs to be done above all else. But the problem is that's uncomfortable work. Most people don't want to do that work because they want to ignore it and think it'll go away. Well, again, all you have to do is look at what that gets you with a physical ailment. When you ignore it and pretend like it doesn't exist, it doesn't go away. It gets worse. So the same thing will happen at a psychic level or at a psychological level. You will ignore those psychological problems and they will only grow and become worse. So That's the first new age deception. The correction for it is, again, you have to go into those areas. You have to deal with them. You have to look at the critical information that needs to be looked at, even if it makes you feel uncomfortable, because the alternative is ignorance. Ignorance is never going to lead to anything good, you know, because that's what we're really talking about. To ignore something, to ignore it, is to remain ignorant of it. So seeing the negative for what it is helps us to understand the causal factors and ultimately guard against the harmful results by identifying those factors and then, basically going to those root causes and changing the dynamic from that level, from the causal level. Then we're in a position of empowerment, and we got there by paying attention, not by dwelling on it, not saying that, but by paying attention to what is and then going to the root cause and finding out, hey, what type of action needs to be taken from this point to correct this imbalance that's present. So that's deception number one.
Before we carry on, Mark, I just want to mention one thing, and I don't mean to put anyone down here personally or anything, but speaking in more general terms, I think, you know, anyone who's been around, you know, quote unquote, New Agers have kind of experienced this, that there are some pretty intense New Agers that have some pretty dark sides that comes out now and then, some pretty violent and aggressive issues, and they need to go to their, you know, they need to do their certain practices or yoga classes or whatever to kind of strap the lid on tighter, you know, so that the pressure don't come out there. And sometimes I think that there's a great relief in that, of course. I'm not trying to put down the methodology, but the fact is that in some cases, these practices works as steam valves. You let out the pressure for a little bit, and then you tighten that back up again. But you can kind of feel and know and see that there is more, the pressure is building up behind there. And I think that, again, that it stems from this aspect that there are issues there that haven't been dealt with or really looked at. Yeah, exactly.
Exactly. You're exactly on point. That's exactly what the negative usage, the false usages of things like meditation and yoga are being used for in the New Age movement. It's exactly to keep those psychological issues that are unresolved and undealt with buried in the subconscious mind so that they're not actually drudged up, confronted, dealt with, and healed. And then the person understands from a conscious level of awareness what those causal factors were. That's why they're making them do these practices, just as you've said, to keep screwing that lid on tighter, that pressure valve. We have to keep it down there, keep it down there. That's exactly right, Henrik. I couldn't have said it better myself.
Very good. All right. Well, let's move on in our list, or your list that you have there, Mark, and see what's next on that. Yeah.
Well, the second one's kind of related to the first. It's never get angry. That's the second New Age deception. You know, it's saying that anger is always bad and always negative. The New Age movement wants people to think that anger is an emotion that should never be felt at all, and we should purge ourselves of anger. And I think that, again, it's a big deception. Nothing could be further from the truth. I'm not trying to tell people stay angry all the time. I'm trying to say when there is injustice in the world, when there is violence taking place that should not be being done to others, when people are being robbed of their rights, anger is the proper emotional response, because anger is what will initially move people to right action if it's righteous indignation. Okay, that's the kind of anger I'm talking about here. So righteous indignation that is channeled properly into right behavior. Okay, so if you're going to get angry about injustice that's going on in the world, and then you're going to channel that into action, speak out against that injustice, help people to understand that what they're doing here is wrong, so you help change that dynamic, that's properly channeled righteous indignation or properly channeled righteous anger. Okay, if you're just going to do counterproductive things with your anger, Okay. Of course, that's not an emotion that we need. Okay. You know, we're talking about getting angry for the right reasons. And there is such a thing. And it doesn't mean, again, just stay in that anger mode. It means if you're going to get angry enough to get up off your ass and do something about it, yeah, then that anger was good. There's nothing wrong with feeling anger like that. But see, what the New Age movement is trying to push in a subtle way is we're going to purge anger. So when you hear about, you know, somebody's free speech rights being completely shut down, when you hear about, oh, the police in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania completely shut down an entire city because they said protest wasn't allowed, we've suspended your right to gather and protest completely. Okay. And we're going to arrest anybody that we find out on the streets because our elite masters are meeting here and you are not allowed to be around them in any way to speak your mind. Well, you know, and people hear this and the New Age and right brain response is, oh, well, I'm not going to get angry about that. That's just what happened. That's what was. Oh, and that's how it is. Well, no, the proper emotional response is you should be really angry about that because your rights were just taken, not just those people's rights that it physically happened to. Your rights were taken. You know whose rights were taken in that instance? The whole world's rights were taken. Okay.
Right.
And for somebody to just say, I'm willing to let that be, I'm willing to accept that and just accept that as how it is immoral. I mean, let's just call it what it is. It's wrong. It's just completely wrong to behave like that. The proper and right emotional response to that is saying, how dare they do that? How? And I'm going to speak up against it and I'm going to continue to speak. And when there's anything else like that, I'm going to stand up and I'm going to speak out against that. And no, they are not going to shut it down. And we will physically resist them if necessary. That's how angry I'll become. They have no right to do that and should not be allowed to get away with anything like that. That is called 100% police state measures. When they're telling you now, we're going to decide whether or not you have a right to speak. You know you're in hot, really hot water at that point.
Yeah.
Okay? And this happened right here in my state, right here in the state of Pennsylvania that occurred.
Yeah. And otherwise, Mark, what will happen? Where will this end? It won't end, right? They will keep taking and taking until there's nothing left to take.
That's all it is. It's measures. It's progressional measures, stepwise measures to see how far can we get, how many more rights can we take away? How will people react when we do this? And again, if people don't stand up and say no, and if righteous indignation and righteous anger don't propel them to stand up and say no, they're going to find themselves in a total prison camp at some point in the future. And I can't say it won't be deserved at that point. It won't be deserved for people like me and you who actually stood up and spoke out. But for the people who just let it happen, I can't tell you that they didn't deserve that result. The problem is they're going to be dragging in a whole lot of people into that result in the aggregate because things won't just happen to the people who deserve them. It will happen to everyone.
Yeah, exactly. You know? Well, that's just the thing. They might favor it temporarily when it's like a group or someone that they think are, you know, quote, extremist, unquote, or something like that. But they, at the end of the day, when they come for you or for, you know, the group that you're, you know, in, then what are you going to do then? You know, then there's no one left. They're going to, that it's the classic old, you know, edict. Right. It's unbelievable. Yeah,
exactly. So the answer is anger is there to be felt for a reason. The proper role of feeling that emotion is righteous indignation in the face of injustice. That's the correction. The third deception is what I call, quote unquote, we're all one, so it's all good. That's the New Age deception three. Mm-hmm. We're all one, so it's all good. And what this means is that the New Age movement is teaching people, well, since everything at some fundamental level, universal level, is oneness, and I agree with that. You know, everything is consciousness at a base level, at some level, all right? But they're saying, since we know we're all one, then everything's okay. Nothing is wrong. There's no such thing as right and wrong, because how could you judge that that's wrong? Well, it's all part of the same thing. It's we're all one, so everything that happens is okay and acceptable and therefore good. There's no such thing as wrong. Right and wrong are dualistic, quote-unquote, dualistic concepts. And you know how dangerous this mentality is? I can't tell you how this may be more dangerous than ignore the negative. It possibly. Mm-hmm. Okay. Mm-hmm. This is the pathway to moral relativism. And a morally relativistic society cannot be a free society because freedom and morality are inextricably interwoven and interconnected. As a society becomes more moral, meaning it understands the difference between right and wrong and willfully chooses the right over the wrong, it becomes more free. As a society becomes immoral, meaning it ignores the difference between right and wrong, and its behaviors are therefore reflected in that belief system of moral relativism, the society collectively becomes more enslaved. That's what I call the law of freedom under natural law. That's how natural law functions. It's very simple. Morality and freedom are proportional to each other. And morality and enslavement are inversely proportional to each other. Okay?
Yeah.
So, this deception is one of the worst ones because it's teaching moral relativism. It's basically saying right and wrong are dualistic and therefore relative. We should not see anything as wrong. It's all right because it's all part of one thing. And again, nothing could be further from the truth. There's a very clear and distinct difference objectively between right and wrong, with right being actions that are based in morality and in natural law because they don't result in harm to other beings, and wrong being actions that are in opposition to morality and natural law because when you take those actions, they harm results to other living beings. There's a very clear delineation between right and wrong behavior that's not based on human perception, that exists independently and inherent to creation, independent of perception and inherent to creation. And that's what people really need to understand, that this is the problem, that people don't objectively know the difference between right and wrong because they're being fed lies like it's all relative and everything is good since everything at a fundamental level is one. And that's not true. So it's not all good. There's a clear difference between right and wrong, and that has to be known and lived and put into action in the real world. So that's the correction to that. I mean, it's very simple. It's just simply abandoning the idea of moral relativism and understanding that there is a moral objective difference. There is a objective inherent difference between right and wrong behaviors. And that's why we call these behaviors rights as opposed to wrongdoings. That's why they're called rights. So that's the third deception. The fourth one is...
Let me interject you for a little bit, Mark. What I find interesting today, and I want to get your take on this, is that it seems that a lot of people also define their morals according to the laws that some government bureaucrat wrote on a piece of paper. Therefore, if you even begin to approach the ideas that, government shouldn't be there because you're actually, it violates natural laws, etc., they think that would mean the end of morality.
Right.
Which is very interesting, kind of idea. It seems like that there is an inherent morality there, or that you can come to those conclusions depending on,
your own
natural laws, if you will. Yeah, that's right.
Yes. And this is proof, Henrik. What you're saying is absolute proof of how deep the brainwashing of the state is. They have most people convinced that what is legal is what is moral, and what is illegal is what is immoral. And people won't admit that. Many people will say, no, I don't believe that, but they do. I proved this in the natural law seminar. We gave a homework assignment to the students to ask people. The first question was, do you believe that what is moral is what is legal and what is immoral is illegal? And most people said, no, I don't really believe that. But then we asked them, if there was a law that was made by politicians that you knew was wrongly prohibiting you from taking a behavior that was a right because the performance of that behavior harmed no other living being. So, for example, let's say the government outlawed reading, for example.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, that's a behavior. If I get a book, I acquire a book lawfully. I didn't steal it from anybody. I didn't kill anybody for it, etc. Somebody else published it, and I picked it up from – I bought it from them or whatever, or they gave it to me. And let's say the government said, well, books are outlawed, right? Now, of course, that's an immoral law, okay? But just let's say they made that law. Well, the reading of this book harms nobody else, okay? So if I take this information in, that's my right. That person had a right to speak that information. I have a right to take it in and consider it. That's called freedom of speech, freedom of the press, and freedom of information.
Yep.
Now, if the government said, reading, you may no longer publish books, you may no longer read books. What we asked is, if the government did something like that, would you be under a moral obligation to obey that law until you could work through official channels to get that law changed again? Most people said, yes, you would be under moral obligation to obey it. And that totally negated what they just said about that they believe moral isn't legal necessarily and immoral isn't illegal necessarily. So, see, there's this cognitive dissonance. They're holding two ideas simultaneously in their mind at the same time and believing both of them can be true, even though they're actually diametrically opposed to each other. That's a psychological illness called cognitive dissonance. And they don't believe that they're in that condition because, again, when you have a mental illness, it's very difficult for you to see what that mental illness is. So, that's an experiment we did in the natural law seminar that I hosted over this past summer. And it shows you that people are in that modality of, you know, we believe that what's legal is moral and illegal is immoral. And if somebody and if a government were to, you know, dictate an immoral law, then, well, hey, we have to follow it until we could find a way to change it. And again, that's not natural law. Natural law is there's an objective standard of morality. What's right is right and always going to remain as such. And what's wrong is always going to remain as such. These are eternal, inviolable, inherent laws that are part of creation that aren't dependent on human perception. And most people have a hard time with that because there's a lot of absolutes contained in the knowledge of natural law, and the human mind through the ego is very opposed to anything absolute, saying this is always this way 100% of the time. The ego doesn't want to hear that. It wants to find the loophole. It wants to find the chink in the armor. And when it comes to natural law, there really is no such thing, and people are very opposed to it as a result. That's why we don't want to learn it. We want to remain ignorant of it because one of humanity's greatest fears is that the real baseline truth of what's really going on here and the differences between right and wrong, et cetera, are things that are absolute. The human ego fears the absolute, and therefore it's very opposed to really understanding natural law. But hopefully if people give that new video that's coming out, it's going to be produced by Richard Grove and the Tragedy and Hope team. If they give that whole thing a chance, and that's going to be over 10 hours of material probably, but if they go through that at their own pace, in their own time, really a deep understanding of natural law will hopefully unfurl before them and become part of their psychological makeup. But I guess I'll move to the next New Age deception.
Sure, go ahead.
And this is a big one, and it's also another subtle one that many people have not ever looked into. It's the concept of solipsism, and I'll get to what that actually means. But I call this the deception called you can never really know. Okay. And it's this idea that knowledge, certainty is impossible. You can never really truly know something, that everything is hazy and nebulous and shifting, or it's all based in perception in any given moment. And then it can change and there's no real knowledge. See, knowledge is a dirty word to a lot of New Agers. Okay. You know what a big part of this is? It's the ideology known as solipsism. That's S-O-L-I-P-S-I-S-M, solipsism. Solipsism means that nothing outside of the self is sure to exist, that only your own consciousness, your own mind actually exists, and the universe is something that's subjective. There's no objective reality. There's no one else actually there. It's all happening in your mind. This is a big New Age BS notion that should be soundly refuted just based on the fact that if this were the case, absolutely nothing that takes place would be real or would matter. And you know how many people they've actually gotten to believe this? They've gotten tons and tons, millions of people actually believe that the entire physical reality is a 100% complete illusion that nothing that happens here matters. See, right. This is the idea that spirit is 100% superior to matter, and the material world has no actual connection to the spiritual reality, and therefore the material world should be rejected out of hand as an illusion that doesn't really exist. And again, this is a hugely dangerous proposition, and it's a false proposition. Again, this is right brain imbalance prevailing over a holistically balanced consciousness. A holistically balanced consciousness does not place any importance of over spirit over matter or matter over spirit. As a matter of fact, I don't look at them as separate. They are one and the same. You're in the spiritual dimension right now. This is the spirit realm. You're in it. Okay. This is also the material realm. All right. You're in both of those realms simultaneously and parallel to each other. The spirit is having an experience in this, yes, admittedly, seemingly physical world, because I'm not going to tell you that what everything is isn't just matter in a state of vibratory energy. Okay.
Yeah.
I just understand that from a logical point of view, even a scientifically validated point of view. But that doesn't mean that anything that happens here doesn't matter. What would make somebody think that? What would make somebody think that is that they don't want to actually get involved in the process of changing it through an act of their own will, because they've been taught to stand down and look at it as whatever happens in this world is inferior to the world of, quote, spirit, and therefore no action needs to be taken to change things in the physical here. So solipsism is a big part of this, and one of the things that's really entrenched this into the New Age culture is this thing called the Course in Miracles. I don't know if you're familiar with it or you've ever heard of it.
Yeah, sure, I have. Yep.
They're teaching people through this that the physical world is a complete illusion, that the ego created the entire physical world, and that nothing that happens here really matters because it's all a fake illusion to keep propagating itself. And don't get involved, only observe and watch, and don't actually try to change what happens here. And again, this is a brilliant strategy on the part of the deceivers of this world. It's a brilliant strategy on the part of the dark occultists who put together this whole ideology, because what they're doing is they're taking a whole segment of the population that is apt to buying into this nonsense, and they're getting them to stand down, not look at what's really going on in the world, and not take any action. So from a strategic point of view, I have to shake the hand of the person that invented this. You know, from our side of the equation, it's horrific. It's terrible because they've taken out so many people off the battlefield, off of the real spiritual battlefield, so to speak, and gotten them to stand down, you know, not even get on the field and participate.
Right.
So all it really is another version of solipsism. If you look up solipsism, that's all this idea is. You can never really know. The physical world doesn't matter. It's all perception. There's no such thing as actual objective reality, and therefore there's no such thing as truth. So, you know, two things become a dirty word in this: truth and knowledge. They become dirty words to the solipsist. Well, there's no such thing as truth. You can never know anything. So how can you claim you have any knowledge of anything? You know?
Right.
And again, it's all a deception. It simply is. Again, there's nothing that I can tell you to do to reject this. It has to be recognized for what it is, as a deception, and say, that's nonsense. That doesn't make any sense. It doesn't compute logically. Objective reality does exist, and truth can be known if we work to acquire it and to analyze it and weed out the logical inconsistencies. We can come to know things. There are things that can be known with certainty, or with even a large amount of certainty, to a point where we can act on them knowing that we're not going to do harm in acting upon those truths. All right. So we have to understand, basically, rights are inherent to creation, and they're based in truth. If we don't have knowledge of truth, we're not going to have knowledge of rights. And therefore, we're going to let evil run amok in the world saying, well, none of this really matters because, you know, there's no truth because there's no objective reality. It's so dangerous. You could see how that could lead toward the very slippery and a very steeply declined slope to totalitarianism.
Well, exactly. You know, the danger here is that it leads to complacency, and everything can be, you know, achieved under that, basically, when, you know, good men and women, you know, stand up to nothing, basically. I think that solipsism could be, just another reaction, I guess, to science, another extremist position to try to challenge something that has been very much established in our world today. I don't know where it comes out of necessarily, and I know that there's different branches of it too, like metaphysical, epistemological, and etc. But it's the complacency aspect there is of course really dangerous, and you argue, yes, Mark, that a lot of people of course get they get squeezed, taken advantage, yep, of, and completely squashed in that process, right?
Exactly. And that what you just brought up, that complacency, actually leads us into the next deception, which is accept everything and never resist evil. Never resist wrongdoings that are actually really going on. See, the New Agers come up with this concept that what you resist persists, right?
Right.
If you resist something, you're going to get more of that thing. And that's not true either. That's another New Age deception. What you ignore and you refuse to pay attention to, even though it's wrong and should be corrected, is what's going to persist. See, what I say to people is the real way to look at resistance is, are you resisting natural law or not? Are you resisting the understanding of natural law? Are you trying to get in the way of that process? Is your ego blocking that from really manifesting in your consciousness? So are you wrongly resisting something that you shouldn't be resisting? And that's what the New Agers are doing. They're wrongly resisting the understanding of morality and natural law from an absolute perspective, okay? Not from this relativistic perspective. If you break down the New Age movement, you come down to two basic concepts. You get down to actually three. It gets down to moral relativism. It gets down to the suppression of the masculine aspect of consciousness. And it gets down to veiling the true understanding of morality and natural law. Okay. So those three aspects are working in conjunction with each other to hold the person's consciousness back. They think they're becoming more conscious. Their consciousness is being held back. That's why it's called a religion. I call it a religion because religare, where the word religion comes from in Latin, means to hold back or to thwart from forward progress. So a religion, by definition, is a belief system that is thwarting someone from forward progress in consciousness. And that's what the New Age movement is doing while acting in a guise of advancing people in consciousness. It's actually doing the opposite because it's holding back the understanding of objective morality from them by propagating these notions of moral relativism and solipsism. So this next deception, deception five, accept everything and never resist anything, is again another dangerous proposition, because it's saying there's never a time to use force to resist anything. You should never reject and resist ideas. You know, there are ideas that are harmful. There are ideas that are untrue, and they should be resisted and rejected and vocally, you know, forcefully, vocally spoken out against at every turn. And New Agers, they'll stand down from doing this. They don't want to. How many New Agers have you seen get up and speak out against the total immoral usury of the Federal Reserve System? Not
right,
many.
Right. No.
You know, how many New Agers are going to get up and talk about the absolute immorality of the current surveillance system of organizations like the NSA? You're not going to see many people speak out against that stuff.
It's too negative,
because
right?
Because they're going to say, oh, we have to ignore that. That can build up and build up and be everywhere, and we're living in a police state, but that's negative, so ignore it. And don't resist that. Oh, us speaking out against that's only going to get us more of that. No, it's the exact other way around. Us not speaking out against that is what's going to get more of that. And this is what the New Agers don't understand. They've been deceived into standing down and ultimately ignoring these things, and therefore that's why these things are going to grow. Let me just say that again. The reason these negative things in the world are going to grow is because too many people are ignoring them and will not resist them and speak out against them. Yeah. It's the exact opposite of what the New Age movement's telling people. There is a time to resist what is wrong. There is a time ultimately to use force against what is wrong if required to do so, if it comes to that, okay? And again, these are active masculine principles. The self-defense principle is a big part of this, of resistance to tyranny. Okay. If I ask people, did what the American revolutionaries did during the Revolutionary War, was that an act of higher consciousness or was that an act of hate and fear? Was that an act of love or was it an act of hate and fear? And most people agree, most people who can actually think with a straight mind, okay, that their brain isn't too burnt, that they're so far off the path that they just spout nonsense, will say that what the American revolutionaries did here in the formation of this country and trying to get away from tyranny of the old world order was a good thing, was born out of somewhat higher consciousness. I'm not telling you these men and women were angels. I'm not telling you they had all the answers. I'm not telling you they were of some kind of perfected consciousness, because I don't worship them as idols like that or anything, right. Nothing of the sort.
Yep.
I'm telling you in many ways there were many things they did that were wrong too. But at a basic level, these people wanted more freedom than what was they were subject to in the old world. That's why they came over here, okay?
That's right.
And what they attempted to set up had some semi-decent safeguards that we've completely ignored. I'm not telling you it was a perfect system, because I don't believe that it was. I think the rejection of all forms of government would have been a lot better. And, and an understanding of natural law would have been much better.
Yeah.
But they did attempt to enshrine some basic principles of natural law into what they were doing. And, you know, they had to physically rebel at some point, because the oppressors would not allow them to break away. The oppressors were coming over here and physically oppressing them repeatedly, taking their rights. And then they came for their means of self-defense. They broke down their monetary system too. So they oppressed them physically, financially, and then ultimately in a way that was threatening to completely remove their self-defense. When they did that, that's when they physically rebelled against them. And they had to kill people to get that done. You know, it wasn't pretty. It was bloody.
Yep.
But anybody that would say that wasn't a necessary act, I don't know what to tell you. Okay? Because that's a right-brained form of modality to think that they had no right to do that. They absolutely had a right to do that. And they were right in their actions to actually physically fight back against the British Empire, against England and George III. Okay, they were morally correct in their decision to do that, to physically wage that war. Okay, so I would consider that a moral war. You know, and there's many people who say, no, it doesn't matter how many people oppress you, you are never to take defensive physical action through the usage of defensive force against them. And that's called the ideology of pacifism, which goes hand in hand with this part of this deception. Never resist. That means always be passive, always be peaceful, even if there's tyranny present, even if there's slavery present. Okay? Well, if there's tyranny and slavery present, I would say you not only have a right to rebel physically, you have a moral obligation and duty to physically rebel against it. Because if you don't do that, you're letting evil overtake everything. You're just saying, I don't care how much evil this is. This form of slavery is evil. This form of tyranny and oppression is evil. But I will not take physical action against it to put it down. Okay? And that in and of itself is immoral. That passiveness to say, I recognize that slavery is present and I will do nothing to stop it. That in and of itself is an immoral decision, an immoral form of thought, and an immoral behavior. And I'll give you an anecdote about this. I was talking to someone at a conference that I recently attended. I did not speak at it, but I attended it and I tabled at it. I tabled a little bit of merchandise at it. And a woman came up and was looking at my – I had a couple of – I don't always have them burned, but I at this point I had a few DVDs present that I was selling there. And the reason I don't want to say that, I want to say it like that, is because I don't want to be deluged by requests for DVDs, because I can't keep them at all times burned, because, you know, I don't always have the money to keep that flowing like that. So sometimes I have them, sometimes I don't. I usually have them at physical events. I'll usually make a few that I could afford to make and then bring them to some physical events that I speak at in person or table at in person. Mm. So I don't really want to get involved in a lot of dealings through the mail and packages and things getting lost and things like that. I'm trying not to run a mail order operation. I put this information up for free on my website. You could download it all from there. And occasionally, if you catch me out at a seminar or at a conference, you could pick up a physical disc or two from me if I have them. So I just want to make that clear. But to get back to the anecdote, I was at a conference tabling information, and a woman said, what's this about? And I told her about, it's about the deceptions of the New Age. And I said, it's about, you know, how they're propagating the idea of accept everything, never resist anything, never rebel, just accept the world the way it is. And she said, well, that's how I am. That's my ideology. I think everything should just be accepted on face value for how it is. I try to change nothing. I accept everything is the way that it is and it's supposed to be. And you know, I don't get involved in the exertion of my will. And I think, you know, I accept the current conditions the way that they are, and that's it. And I said, and you think that's okay? And she said, yeah, I follow this thing called the Course in Miracles. And I said, I said, here we go, you know, into myself, because I know what this whole thing is about. And, you know, I said, well, let me ask you something. Do you see what's taking place in the world today? All the surveillance state, the so-called security state that's really just all preparations for a totalitarian system, a police state. And she goes, yeah, but I try not to look at it that way. I try not to see it that way. Her exact words were, I prefer not to see it that way. That's it. Now listen to that. I prefer not to see it that way. What she's really saying is, I prefer to ignore that reality because all that matters is my current perception. And if I perceive it not to be that way, I tell myself, oh, it's not really that way, then magically it won't be that way. This is solipsism. And this is the idea of standing down, don't actually get involved, accept everything as it is, never resist, never rebel. Don't try to change a thing. Okay, it's defeatism is what this is. See, total acceptance of tyranny and evil is defeat. Total resistance of tyranny and evil is victory. And this is what people have to understand. This is a complete new age deception, this idea of allow tyranny and evil to run amok in our world. And what I said is, indirectly, what you're supporting is the continuance of slavery. I said, you do know that, right? And her answer was, I prefer not to see it that way. Yep. Now, in hindsight, I didn't say this to her at the time, but what I thought of the next day or whatever was what she was really saying there is, I prefer not to see, period. Forget anything after that, not that this way. She's saying, I want to remain closed. I want to remain asleep. I want to remain ignorant and unconscious of what's really going on in the world all around me. And I don't want to get involved and take action because it's cowardice. What this deception really boils down to, Henrik, is the people who buy into this part of the New Age movement, ultimately they like it because they're cowards deep down inside. Deep down in their gut, deep down in their heart, they're cowards. And I realize how harsh that sounds. Just to say it straight out, just like that, unapologetically, just like that. Many people will hear that as very harsh. And I personally don't care how you want to hear it. I'm telling you, these people are cowards. They don't want to take action against a bully and an enslaver because they're afraid of what they might have to lose. See, this person probably has a nice posh house in the suburbs with the 3-car garage, you know, and a nice McMansion someplace who's set financially and doesn't really care about what goes on in the world. As long as I have my nest, I have my trough, I have my little blankets, I have my mobile cart called a car, and it doesn't make a difference whether I'm an animal in a pen. Okay? Now, you know, and as harsh as that sounds, that's exactly as it is. And what these people are saying is, the bully can run roughshod all over me as long as he gives me my little pen and my little trough and my little mobile cart and lets me eke out a little comfortable existence here in a state of actual duress and slavery. But I won't actually ever get involved in rebelling or speaking out against my enslavers. You know, I'll just accept it as my lot in life.
Yeah. Well, the lack of abuse, I mean, there is an abuse there, but direct abuse of like someone, you know, beating someone, that action or lack of action is mistaken for an act of kindness. If you look at this from the point of view of the Stockholm syndrome, you know, and that's really what it is. It's also this idea of freedom from responsibility that has been, you know, very appealing, for, you know, a political attribute really for centuries now in terms of We'll take care of it for you. You know, just give it up to us, and we'll make it all nice for you. You know, so these are very old kind of ideas and concepts people are battling, and they get rehashed and reformulated into new concepts all the time. You know,
right. So the correction to this deception is we have to understand there's two pillars to becoming truly enlightened. There's two basic concepts that need to be understood. Again, the sacred feminine principle is the non-aggression principle. Don't initiate violence against your fellow beings. Very simple. And the New Agers understand that one. But the one they don't understand is the sacred masculine principle of self-defense. If violence is initiated against you, you have an inherent right to repel it with the defensive usage of force. And this is a right that no one can take away from you. It's an inherent right. It wasn't granted to you by man. It can't be taken away by man's laws. And the New Agers don't get that. They don't want to get that, again, because really deep down inside, it's what you said. It's the abandonment of their personal responsibility to get involved, to exert their will, and to defend themselves. As long as you know you're operating within the parameters of natural law, within the parameters of the self-defense principle combined with the non-aggression principle. If you're not initiating the violence, but violence is being initiated against you, you have a right to defend yourself from it. And I, for one, will never give up that right, or say the state has the sole right to perform that duty. No, it does not. You know, as a matter of fact, the state really shouldn't have any business in the performance of that duty. I think that's an inherent fundamental flaw in the concept of the invention of the state, is we're going to make this entity comprised of people, and we're going to give them the responsibility to protect us. I think it's always our responsibility to defend and protect ourselves, even if it becomes a horrible, unbearable burden to do so, and we can do nothing else. That will still be our moral responsibility, because we let immorality gets so out of hand that it came to the point where we would have to constantly be defending ourselves against violence. See, that's the whole point. They say, well, oh, you want a world where all you'll have to do is defend yourself against thieves, robbers, murderers, etc.? Yes, I do. That is what I want. I want the cannibals at my door. How about that? Let's go to the total extreme. I don't want to be enslaved, okay? That where other people see the enslavement system as something that is morally legitimate. That's where I have a much bigger problem than there be a murderer or a cannibal around every corner that I turn. I'd right. rather have that, because no one's going to see that as legitimate, as morally legitimate. The problem is that people see the state as morally legitimized slavery and violence.
Yeah.
And they think that's going to protect us from slavery, from chaos.
And it doesn't.
Well, slavery and violence are chaos.
Well, exactly.
Know?
And it doesn't. We have all those things right now as well. You know, we have murder. Yeah. There's rape out there. There's robbery right. and thieves and everything else, you know. So it doesn't work, you know.
And again, it's not only our moral responsibility to protect ourselves against it, not hand over that responsibility to someone else. It's our moral responsibility to educate people from when they're very young so that they don't become people who behave like that in those immoral ways. So that's the fifth New Age deception of accept everything, never resist.
Let me ask you one more thing about that. This could be an interesting point. So regarding this concept that you were talking about of basically standing up in due time before it gets far enough, do you think that the government, or then the people within the government really, reasons very much in the same way when it comes to their position that they deem it's their duty to eradicate those that might be extremists, or later on, you know, exhibit antisocial behavior, etc.? We've heard all these labels that they're trying to put on people, but basically that they take this action in effort to save the, you know, people from what they consider can turn into something very dangerous in their view. And if so, like, if it's their responsibility and duty to do this, as you talked about, how do you reason against their position?
Because there's such a thing as objective truth, and they don't have it. They're wrong. And I understand how, you know, just totally contrary and baseline that can seem. But in other words, these people only have a belief that that's what they're doing. That's not the reality of what they're doing. They can't see the actual truth of the matter, that all forms of statism are slavery. And that's what they're supporting. Because if someone has a moral obligation to obey somebody else, that's called them being their slave. That's called them being their subject. If one class of people has a moral right to issue commands to other people that they call laws, and the other class of people have a moral obligation to obey those at all times, whether they're right or wrong or not, okay? That's a situation of being masters up here, called the lawmakers, you have a moral obligation to obey, and that they have a moral right to rule. And then down at the bottom, you have a slave class that has a moral obligation to obey all the commands of the master class. That's what government is. That's not what I think government is. See, this is the whole thing. When I make a statement that that's what it is, I'm not telling you that's my belief about what it is. What I'm saying to you is that someone needs to sit down and really analyze deep down at the very fundamental philosophical level, is that true, what I just said? Is that what government is? Because if that's what it is, and that is what it actually is, then that's called slavery. Government's just a euphemism for a form of slavery that they have gotten everybody to accept. See, because the idea of accepting the old world order was the acceptance of this king is our master and ruler. He has the moral right to issue commands. We may not disobey them. We have a moral obligation to obey them. Now we look at that today as slavery. But if you just replace the king up at the top of that pyramidal structure with government, then we look at that as somehow inherently morally legitimate.
Sure.
And it's not. It's the same thing. All you did is you diffused the concept of authority being vested in the king to being vested in a group of people. It's an oligarchy. A government is a group of people that's oligarchically in control of the rest of the people.
With the illusion of democracy on top of it.
Right. And that's called slavery, ladies and gentlemen. I don't care what you want to euphemize it as. You can call it anything you want. You could call it a social structure. You can call it a government. You can call it, our personal way of life, our power structure. I don't care what you call it. It's slavery by any other name. And this is the problem. These people are advocates of slavery, and they don't see it that way. See, because they're not seeing it accurately. They are seeing it through a filtration of being in the box. Their box is the political box, the government box. Well, you're telling me that this, what I'm doing is actually morally wrong? And I think I've been told all my life that what I'm doing is morally trying to help people. Well, the real truth of the matter is, independent from my perception or anybody else's perceptions, not because I'm saying it. And again, people will say, well, Passio is just trying to say this is true because he's saying it's true. No, I'm not. I'm telling you to look into what it really is for yourself. Get all your preconceptions of what government is out of your mind and look at it actually on its face. It's one group of people saying we're the commanders, and the other group of people are the people who must accept our commands and don't have a moral right to say no. And that's called slavery. By definition, not because I'm saying it's that way, because in reality, it is actually that way. And that's another thing. People have a very hard time hearing that from somebody's mouth. They're trying to say, well, you're just saying it's true because you are saying that's true. No, I'm saying that I've discovered that that is true because that's the truth of the reality that is present. And these people don't have that knowledge. Their perceptions are not aligned with the reality that's there. Their perceptions are colored, and they're saying, well, we prefer not to see it that way. See, it's this filter of perception. Perception isn't reality, okay? It's just what it says. It's a perception. You have to align your perception to the reality of the truth of what is. And that's what the people who are involved in government have not been able to do. Their perception is de-aligned. It is not aligned to reality. It's askew to reality. And they're convinced that they're doing something that is legitimate and must continue, when in fact they're doing something that can only bring more disorder, discord, and chaos into the world.
Yeah,
that's the difference.
And I think that's the point with it as well. And if we go forward with that idea, I think soon enough we're going to be in that kind of pre-crime scenario. You're basically guilty until proven innocent. Everyone could turn into a potential terrorist at any junction here. So we're just going to treat you as one by default. And what's interesting here to me, Mark, is that society has now turned into a system that is defined by those who have broken the rules, basically. that the government has come up with. It's not a system of what's possible and what you can do, but what is not possible and what you can't do. So it's a very, you know, dismissive system in that way. And it's built on this premise that it's there to secure and protect you. And that's where people give up their power to them. But at the same time, you know, by their own admission, they are not capable of keeping those promises that they gave to us about that. So it's complete chaos as it exists right now.
And the supporters of that system, see, I think we really have to bring it down to more very simple language. We have these concepts of, well, this person's a statist because of what they believe, and that person's an anarchist of what they believe. The real divide here, Henrik, is do you accept that slavery is legitimate, or do you understand that slavery is never legitimate? So what we have called statists or, you know, believers in government, you know, all this comes down to is these are all people, and this is the majority of the world, that believe erroneously that there is some sort of moral legitimacy to slavery. They want to call it other things and euphemize it, but really a statist is a supporter of slavery. That's it.
Yep.
And what we would traditionally call an anarchist, a true anarchist, one that knows that there's no legitimacy to rulership and mastery over other people. An anarchist does not mean that there are no rules. An anarchist means that there are no rulers. Hence, there is no masters and no slaves, from anarchon in Greek. An meaning not present or absent, and archon meaning ruler or master. So no ruler, no master. No master-slave relationship is what anarchy really means from its etymological definition. These are people who know slavery is illegitimate at all times and all places. So really you only have two kinds of people: believers in slavery and rejectors of slavery. Those who support slavery and those who know slavery is always illegitimate and should not be practiced anywhere ever. That's it. And this is really what the New Age movement won't touch. They won't touch that because ultimately they're believers in authority too. They won't admit that, but I went up to people at the New Age Expo here. It's called the Mind Body Spirit Expo. Mind Body Spirit Expo. They hold it in Philadelphia once a year. I went up to the Mind Body Spirit Expo last year in 2012, and I asked a bunch of people while I was walking around the floor, "Do you vote Democrat or Republican? Do you partake in the political system, the political process? Do you believe in government? Do you think, you think government should just continue in general, that it's a necessary thing?" Almost universally, all those people that were at that expo, believers in government, vote, support the system. Most of them were Democrats, very few Republicans, a couple, but all of them believers in the entire system of government as being legitimate.
Yeah.
And I was just thinking, how could these people possibly consider that they're true spiritual people, that they're people who have a real understanding of spirituality? A real understanding of spirituality means that you know that there's no legitimacy to slavery because there's no legitimacy to one person or group of people being the master over others. That's it.
Right. Yeah.
Okay, so number six is a watered-down version of the real laws of attraction. You see things like The Secret in the New Age movement that teach you if you want something improved in your life, or if you want conditions to be different, all you need to do is think about them and hold the emotion present, and then it'll eventually come to you. Well, that's not the real laws of attraction. I'm not telling you that's not part of the laws of attraction, but the real laws of attraction involve a deep understanding of natural law, how we are creating, how humanity is creating its entire existence, the quality of its existence in the aggregate by our collective understanding or lack of understanding of morality, and therefore aligning our behaviors to natural law. And that's what the real laws of attraction are. I give this seminar called Natural Law, the Real Law of Attraction and How to Apply It in Your Life, because understanding natural law is what the real laws of attraction are about. That's how to create real harmony and order and goodness in your life collectively throughout society. Okay. So they're giving you this little sliver of how the laws of attraction work and telling you, oh, that's the whole thing. No, that's not the whole thing. You're leaving out the most important thing, which is the objective difference between right and wrong, which is what really governs the laws of attraction. And by leaving that out, you're leaving the big master key out of the equation, you know, and therefore it's creating the prison even further by keeping people in an ego-driven mind state. Well, this is about what I want. I want the new car. I want the new house. I want the new job. You know, it's not about I want actual real justice in the world. It's not about I want people to stop living in a system that condones and supports and continues violence and calls it justice and calls it government, and therefore violence is okay. You know, it's this leaving out of the natural law component, which is the biggest component of the law of attraction, that makes the New Age variant of the laws of attraction a deception. So the correction of that is you have to understand natural law in a very fundamental and deep way if you're going to understand how the real laws of attraction operate. And I go deeper into that in the extended podcast. And you can get really into the natural law side of it in this probably over 10-hour video that's about to be released shortly on, which was a taping of my natural law seminar in Connecticut. So that's sixth New Age deception. Number seven is a false notion of forgiveness. And this is the idea that forgiveness means just being willing to accept someone no matter how many wrongdoings they do. You know, that it's this naive approach that we're going to just allow all this wrongdoing and keep saying that it's okay an infinite number of times. And we're just going to say, oh, that can just continue to go on, and we don't need to actually take any corrective measures when it comes to that. You know, we'll just, keep accepting that as this person's behavior, and, we're not going to actually demand any change out of them. Well, that's not what real forgiveness is. That's a false notion of forgiveness. Forgiveness doesn't mean continuing to excuse willful commissions of wrongdoing, wrong actions, an infinite number of times. That's right. That's called spiritual naivete. That's called not being streetwise, okay? A real apology means, this is where real forgiveness starts. It means the person who's doing the wrongdoing has to be willing to tell the truth that they've been involved in wrongdoing and say, hey, I know now this is wrong, okay? Will you forgive me and not take, you know, a harmful action against me for having done this? If I agree, I'm not going to do this anymore. That's the door to forgiveness. Okay, and it's a great movie. I just accidentally checked out. Wasn't even really intending to do it. It was called Devil, and it's kind of a B movie type thing, right? But I really felt I should mention it when I bring this up because I thought it had, although it was a little bit on the cheesy side, kind of B movie-ish, it wasn't a bad movie. The concept was very good. It was people trapped on an elevator, and the elevator allegorically represented the Earth. And there was the devil was there with them. One of the people was actually the devil in disguise on the elevator, on the trapped elevator. And all these people had done wrongdoings that they would never admit to anyone. They would never come out and say, I did this. It was wrong. I'm sorry. Right? So the devil ends up killing all the people on the elevator, except for the guy that finally says, I'm sorry for the wrongdoing that I've done, tells the person what he did to his family and said, I can't do anything to take it back. It was wrong. It's still wrong. I'm so sorry. Will you forgive me? And then the person says, yes, I'm willing to forgive you. But he had to make the apology first. And the devil says to the person, I really wanted you, meaning like I really wanted your soul. But he has to back off at that point. He can't take his soul because he actually made the sincere apology. This is what humanity needs to do. See, we're in the place where we can't admit we were wrong. And we're not really engaging in the dynamic of forgiveness because forgiveness has to start with an apology. And for the New Age movement people out there that think, no, forgiveness is only one-way street. No, it is not. It is a two-way street. For somebody to say to a wrongdoer, I forgive you no matter what you do, is not real forgiveness. I don't care whether you even think that's real forgiveness. I'm telling you, it's not the definition of forgiveness. Forgiveness means that the wrongdoer is sorry for what he has done and is asking you to give him something when he has nothing to actually give you except his word that he will not do this anymore. That's why it's called forgiveness. It's on an act of faith that you're believing the person in the moment, gauging his sincerity and saying, I believe you're sincere in your apology, and therefore I'm willing to give you this other chance. Okay?
Right.
That's what real forgiveness is, and that needs to be clearly understood. And the New Age movement thinks that forgiveness is this idea where it's just a one-way street where you just say, I don't care what you do, I still forgive you. That's not forgiveness. I don't know. I'm sorry. All I could really do is tell you that's not what forgiveness is. That's what many people believe that forgiveness is, but by definition, that is not what real forgiveness is. So I'm all for real forgiveness, but for real forgiveness to take place, an apology must come first. Wrongdoers have to be willing to say, I now recognize what I was doing was wrong. I will desist in those actions. Will you give me another chance to integrate into society and accept me as who I am, based on my sincere word that I will not do this behavior anymore? And then guess what? I'll welcome someone like that with open arms.
Right.
That's what real forgiveness is. So the next one is, the next deception is that chaos should be feared. This is the idea that, oh, we have to be kept safe. We have to sanitize the world to make it safe for everybody and bring it down to a child's level of being able to interact in the world because, oh, if there's anything dangerous, so we have to do away with that. And all this is going to do is create a prison system if we continue down that road.
Yep.
See, it's the wrong way. The correction to this is it's the wrong way of seeing what chaos really is. Chaos isn't something that's so horrible and terrible and oh my God, we have to sanitize it from the earth and it can never be allowed to exist. Chaos is a teacher. It's what occurs when we're not doing something correctly to show us, hey, you weren't doing that correctly. You need to try something else. And when you don't get a chaotic result, you'll know that you're doing the right thing. So chaos is a teacher. It teaches through what is known as the apophatic method. The apophatic method means the negative. A-P-O-P-H-A-T-I-C, apophatic. It means I'm going to learn how to do something right by failing at trying to do it and getting it wrong and therefore saying, wow, in doing this wrong, I learned what not to do. And therefore now, through that process of elimination, I now know what to do. That's what chaos is there for. So I give the analogy, a child who touches a very hot burning electrical stove because they see the orange and they want to go check it out and they've never seen anything like that before and they put their finger on the hot electric stovetop. How many times do you think they're likely to do that?
They learn real good that first time, you know? So
I would highly suggest that most people would only ever do that one time.
Yeah, that's right.
And then they would learn pretty well that's not the thing to do, because a chaotic thing resulted. Well, this is what we have to allow for in society. We have to say chaos is a teacher. People need to be allowed to make mistakes. Now, I'm not telling you let chaos run amok all around you. I'm saying we have to have a level of freedom that is inherent to the possibility for learning because it embraces the possibility of chaos. That's what where an open learning environment is present.
Yep.
An open learning environment is not a sanitized place where chaos is impossible. An open learning environment is it can have some general knowledge that can act as control conditions. You go into a laboratory, you're going to observe safety rules, okay? But if you're trying something that's truly experimental, you have to be open. There may be a chaotic result here if I'm trying to create something truly new,
yep,
okay?
That's
so
right.
You take some cautionary measures, but in knowledge to do that. You know, you there's ways of doing that that don't involve, you know, you wouldn't look at a laboratory as a prison, okay? We can do things that are creative and possibly even experimental, but not have so many controls in place that we have totally sanitized freedom from the earth. And that's what we're moving into now, this obsessive, this obsession to keep things safe, and it's resulting in taking away people's inherent freedoms.
Oh yeah,
that's
yeah. I've, just a quick note on that. I've seen society; they're obsessed with guarantees and security, and it's stunting people's growth, and it's doing us a tremendous disservice. It's actually taking humanity, you know, backwards in time as opposed to, you know, forward progression and learning, as you say. So I absolutely agree with that, you know, Mark. Yeah.
It's creating a draconian society that is totally, you know, control obsessed and obsessed with watering everything down in the world to the level of a child.
Yeah. Yeah. It's creating children. That's the thing. If you treat people like children, they will become like children.
Exactly. So the ninth deception is that enlightenment is ultimately only about changing yourself, never about reaching out to other people and influencing them. And it's about feeling good all the time. That's the end result. That's the end goal. This is a narcissistic, egoistic variant of enlightenment. It's not enlightenment at all. Okay. It's actually egoism and narcissism. And it's saying that your goal should be just your own comfort and feelings. That's what you should be guided by. You shouldn't go into uncomfortable situations that don't make you feel good and aren't what you want to do. You should only live for what New Agers, many of them, call your purpose, okay? Which is, in my opinion, all that's really about is feeding the ego, and it's about the lower will. What do I want? You know, if I was serving my lower will and what made me feel good all the time, I would just pursue a hedonistic lifestyle. Why would I take the time to learn all the information that I've learned and then try to help other people understand it as well? I wouldn't do this with my time. This is certainly not a selfish use of my time. I tell people this at the beginning of many of my lectures. I say, hey, folks, I really want to be here. You want to know why? I already know this stuff. Okay. I'm here because I feel I have a moral obligation to reach out to other people so that they may also understand this material. That's why I do it, out of a moral obligation, not because this is what I want to be doing and it's the thing that's leading to my greatest happiness personally in life. You know, leading the greatest happiness, I would, you know, go off and, you know, pursue whatever other interests that I have. Music or art or, you know, whatever. Doesn't make a difference what it is. It would just be something that I want to do with my own time, regardless than what I know I must do with my own time, because I have a moral obligation, having taken in this knowledge, to disseminate it freely to other people. That's why I do what I do, not just because it's what I want to do. Okay, so that's what people have to understand. Real enlightenment, you do things that you know that are moral and that you must do. It's not about just changing yourself. It's about, yes, changing yourself at first. But then when you have that knowledge and you've changed yourself for in a morally better and responsible way, you have an obligation to help to change others. And yes, you cannot change others. You cannot make them change. I capitulate that. No one can make anybody change or do anything, but you can influence someone to change themselves by continuously speaking the truth into existence. Okay, the truth doesn't have a voice. Its voice works through us. If we don't speak it, other people don't hear it. And that's why we're in a situation where there's tons of deception and lies everywhere.
Yeah,
the people who know the truth in many cases aren't speaking.
They keep quiet. Yeah, exactly. I've always said that for a long time. If more people talked, and I'm not talking about a snitch culture or anything like that, but where true information could be learned about, you know, immoral behavior or whatever, the one of the ways out of the situation that we're in is simply more people talked about what they see or what kind of you know, people that they're dealing with, that would spread the word about good people, and it would spread the word about bad people. You know, very simple.
Henrik, very quickly, I'll give you an anecdotal example, and I won't embarrass this person by mentioning his name, but there's an associate of mine. I wouldn't call him a friend. I've met him a few times, and I've talked to him extensively enough to know he's one of the most knowledgeable people that I know. And I'm not to brag, but I feel that's saying a bit, okay? I'm telling you, he's on par with someone like a Michael Tesarion or a Jordan Maxwell, okay?
Right.
And you know what he says?
Nope.
Zip. Nothing. Silence. Zero. Okay. Now you want to know what I think of this? That's
sure.
The worst position you could possibly ever be in. You know what? All I am is thankful that that's not me. And again, I won't mention his name. He may or may not ever hear this, but I'll tell you what, I'd never want to be in that person's shoes. That's the worst place to be. So anybody that's knowledgeable out there and you're hearing this, you have a moral responsibility and an obligation to get involved in this battle. Get up off the out of the bleachers, get up out of the dugout, and get on the field. Off the bench and onto the field where the game is played, okay? Because you're not actually taking real action and you're not actually engaged in wisdom unless you're active and you're doing something with what you know. You can keep taking it all in until you know everything. And it, you know how useful that is? Until you act, it's of no use, zero usage. It only becomes wisdom when it's put into physical action in the real world. So that's what I would have to say about the idea that enlightenment's only about changing yourself. It's a total deception, and you have to bring what you know to other people to influence change in them. The last deception that I put in my presentation, I'll go into one additional one after this.
Yep.
The 10th one is truth doesn't need to be defended. Okay, well, of course, truth is going to exist eternally. It's inherent to creation. It can't be destroyed. Truth exists, and it will never be destroyed. That doesn't mean here on the earth that the truth doesn't need to be defended when it's coming under a barrage, an attack on all sides of lies and deception. Again, we're the vehicles by which the truth is spoken into the world. And the ones who do that most frequently and most continuously are the ones who end up basically getting their way and creating what they want. That's why the dark side is winning right now, because they're constantly bombarding people with their ideologies. They're constantly speaking their message. They're constantly speaking their deceptions. Their propaganda doesn't stop 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, it reaches the most people.
Yeah, media, entertainment, music. It's just, I mean, when you really begin to analyze some of these components, you're like, my God, there's some tireless, you know, just monsters out there. They're like, that are working on this day and night, around the clock, all the time, and it just keeps on coming. You know, it's like and that's a good point, because that's why it's so important that more people get involved in analysis and seeing through some of these lies to make that information available out there of what they see and what they've pieced together. You're right. Yeah.
And we'll become the opposite. We'll become that continuous angelic voice that's speaking the truth out into existence constantly, all day long, 24 hours a day.
Yeah.
You know, we have to create a more voluminous body of work and use more creative methods to get this into other people's hands in such a way that they will take it into themselves.
Yeah.
And that's an act of will. That's an act of will. That is a masculine principle of reaching out to other people and not letting deception and lies be spoken in your presence unchallenged. It doesn't mean you have to force something down somebody's throat, but if somebody else says, oh, hey, I heard on the news that these vaccines are okay for your child and there's no danger in them, you need to say, no, that's a nonsense deception put out there by propagandists and eugenicists, and there is tons of evidence to suggest that this is no good. Don't just say, oh, well, that's what they believe and I'm not going to say a word. You have to speak the truth in their presence, even if it creates an uncomfortable situation for everybody. That involves action. That involves a masculine component saying, I'm going to get involved here and make a change and do something and speak out. That's an active masculine principle, and that's why it's so suppressed in the New Age circles. The last thing, and this is something I didn't include in the presentation, but it's going to be a bonus New Age deception, is the Savior is coming at any minute now.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
That's New Age deception number 11. The Savior is right around the corner, or he's parked in orbit around the earth and he's getting ready to come down at any moment. So, you know, whether it's a masculine Savior, a feminine Savior, a neutral Savior, a Savior that's just an idea, or a Savior that is an extraterrestrial presence, okay? You know, Buddha is going to return. Christ is going to return. Krishna is going to return. Mithra is going to return. Horus is going to return. Zoroaster is going to return. Okay? All of these saviors, Kukulkan Khan will return at any moment. You know?
Right.
Or the Andromedans are coming on their massive planetary-sized spacecraft to come down to the Earth and rescue us from our own ignorance at any moment, Henrik. Don't
convenient.
You know?
Yeah, chill out. You know, take it easy, because it's all going to get fixed.
Don't forget, no action required on your part. Don't bother learning a thing. Don't bother changing. Don't bother influencing other people to change. Don't bother getting involved, because somebody else has this. They got it in hand. It's all being taken care of. No action is required on your part. This is the Savior complex. And let me tell you something. Anybody that believes this nonsense is going to be waiting a long, long, long time in a cage. In a cage. You will be waiting forever in a cage if you believe that there is some external savior that's coming here to rescue the people of the earth from their own ignorance.
Yeah.
That they refuse to understand how natural law works. They refuse to understand morality and choose the right action over the wrong action. And yet some external being force or group of beings is going to come here and rescue us from ourselves. All I have to say to that is good luck to you. Because again, you will be waiting forever inside a cage of your own making. And people will hate me for saying that. And that's okay.
Sure. Yeah.
Hear
yeah.
that however you want to hear it. But the whole point is, this is to externalize power. That's the point of this deception.
Yep.
If you continue to externalize your power, you're never gaining real knowledge, and therefore you're never truly empowering yourself. The problem with the people of the earth is they're ignorant, and therefore they have no real power. See, I tell people, I'm very powerful, okay? The problem is most people aren't as powerful as me because they're not as knowledgeable as me. If people were as knowledgeable as I am, and I'm not saying that in an egotistical way, I'm just saying I have a lot of knowledge. I'm not saying I know everything. I certainly, most certainly do not. Okay. But what I do know does constitute quite a bit of knowledge. And there's a lot of other researchers. They have a lot of knowledge, a lot. And therefore, they have a lot of power. They have the ability to convert that knowledge into power. So I am powerful, meaning full of the ability to wield power because I have knowledge. And that insulates me from forms of deception and manipulation. I know what's going on in certain situations. I can prepare. I can react properly. Okay? I can act properly given this information and these set of circumstances. And therefore, that's an empowered position to be in. When conversely, you don't have knowledge, you're in a state of ignorance, you don't have any power. And that's why so many people in this world are disempowered. And they're waiting on an external influence to come and rescue them from their own ignorance. They're going to remain in a disempowered situation, waiting forever for something that's never going to come. What is really required is for them to take in knowledge, convert it to understanding, and then once they're in the position of understanding, you are empowered to take action. And taking action is what's really going to make real world change take place. And we'll get out of all of these boxes for consciousness, and we'll get out of this self-inflicted prison that we have created as a result of doing that very thing. Taking in that knowledge, converting it to understanding, and then taking action based upon that understanding for the right reasons. So there's the New Age deceptions and some of the corrections that I offer to them, Henrik, and I hope you've enjoyed that.
Oh, very much. And just a point on the last note you mentioned here, last number, that people find all kinds of things and other people, of course, as saviors that are going to speak for them, represent their drives and needs. And I mean, this is a very old component of most religions, and it's worked tremendously successful. And I think that that's why they keep kind of hammering on this point, to just wait around, you know, and just, again, docile and just kind of complacency. Yep. And there's a lot of components to that. So very good point.
It's brilliant. I mean, you have to concede it's a brilliant strategic move on the part of the dominators. They're getting people to externalize their power and desist in taking real world action. Therefore, the control system never gets brought down, it never gets changed, and the enslavement continues. And this is what people need to understand. If you are externalizing your power to anything else, you are enslaved. You have real power when you bring into yourself the knowledge of two things: how the psyche works, how all the components of the psychology work, and then how the natural laws that we're working in harmony with to co-create our reality work. You're in a position of power. That's what's going to be the real empowering modalities to create the change that we say we want to see in the world. If you don't have that knowledge of those two components, you're going to remain powerless, and the situation externally in the world can not be changed as a result.
And those people who created the savior or control the savior can channel the energy of those followers into a position that is going to be empowering to those people in control.
For them.
Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah.
You exactly hit it on the head. Hit the nail on the head. That's exactly right. So I hope people will really analyze and take in and truly deeply think about what I've said here today regarding these deceptions. And if you want a much more detailed unfolding of them, check out my video on my website on whatonearthishappening.com in the video section. It's a video podcast complete with slides. 134 slides go along with the lecture. It's called New Age Bullshit and the Suppression of the Sacred Masculine. I think you'll be very enlightened on the other side of watching that if you dedicate a little bit of time and attention to it and check it out at your own pace, at your own leisure. You'll come out on the other side in a very enlightened and empowered position.
All right. Very good. Well, thank you for putting some extra time in here in the second segment for us. Well, Mark, we really appreciate it. And thanks again for your thoughts and perspective, much needed input on some of these topics in an effort to attain further balance to a very unbalanced world. So thanks again. WhatOnEarthIsHappening.com is the website. I hope to do it again soon, Mark. Thank you again.
Henrik, again, thank you so much. It's an honor to be here today with you. And anytime you want to have me back, just ask, and it'd be my honor to do so.
We have upcoming on Red Ice Radio, Brian Kennard on the American author John Steinbeck as a CIA spy. Some pretty interesting stuff there. Mark Mitchum on the smart grid agenda and the future of technology and mankind's role in that. Further ahead, we have Jesse Ventura and many, many more coming on. Well, thank you for listening and for your membership and your support. We'll be back in just a few days. I hope you have a great weekend and that we'll speak to you soon. Stay sharp and don't forget to have some fun.